got picked on at school for things he couldn't change. He tried his best to play it cool, but in the seventh grade, you either fit right in or you don't fit. That's just the cold hard truth. I wish that I'd have been the friend that Billy never knew. I think it's time to come together, you and I can make a change. Maybe we can make a difference, make the world a better place. Look around and love somebody, we've been hateful long enough. Let the good Lord reunite us to this country that we love's undivided.
Yup. You either go to church or you're gonna go to hell. Get a job and work or you're gonna go to jail. I just kinda wish we didn't think like that. Why's it gotta be all white or all black? And when we gonna learn to try on someone's shoes sometimes?
That's right.
When we gonna start to see from someone else's eyes?
I think it's time to come together. You and I can make a change. Maybe we can make
Welcome back.
A difference.
Top of the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast this Thursday, October 28th, 2021. Go ahead, John. We're on phones. John in Tennessee. Go ahead. Oh, we lost John. Okay. And we lost Sherry. Holy cow. All right, I'm going to play this little clip, though. I wanted to play this after yesterday, and especially in conjunction with what I just read. Actually, let me read a little bit more. You put these two things together, this is crazy stuff. Crazy stuff. You know, 3D printing of a man, like John said yesterday. So, let me see. I don't know exactly what page it's on. This guy? Well, you know, there are these interesting excerpts. So, how about this? In the process of eating this diseased tissue, germs create waste products that cause the symptoms we associate with being sick. Reif and his colleagues performed experiments where they took the toxic waste products of certain germs and injected them into animals and reproduced the symptoms of disease without ever exposing the animals to the germs themselves. These symptoms often cause people to go to the doctor. If the patient has a sore throat, the doctor may swab the throat and find bacteria there, much like cholesterol we discussed a couple of chapters back. The doctor then assumes that the presence of these germs means they are causing the disease, when in fact, the germs are merely there to clean up the mess. He then prescribes an antibiotic to kill the germs. With the germs dead, the symptoms stop and the patient thinks the drug worked. But until the actual cause of the diseased tissue has been resolved and the dead tissue is removed, the disease remains and the symptoms will likely return. And my little marginal note says, aka in remission. Not what we hear. It's in remission, but it'll likely return. Why? Because you haven't dealt with the cause. That's why, obviously. Maybe this bit too, real quick, to help further illustrate the differences between the two competing theories, i.e. germ theory, a.k.a. monomorphism versus pleomorphism. There's yet another theory you may not have heard of. It's called the rat theory of garbage. It says that wherever you find lots of garbage, you'll find rats. Louis Pasteur and his camp would have you believe that the rats, the germs, caused the garbage, diseased tissue. Beauchamp's camp would say that the garbage created the perfect environment for rats, and so they came in, made it their home, and had lots of baby rats. Pasteur's camp, Western medicine, would use harsh chemicals to kill the rats, leaving the garbage and the lasting effects of the chemicals behind. Of course, once the chemicals are gone, the rats will probably return. Although it may take a little longer before the effects are seen, Beauchamp's camp would address the cause of the problem. First, they would clean up the garbage that was already there. Then they would set up recycling centers, compost heaps, and the like. Clean, parenthetically, clean up the liver, kidneys, colon, etc. to prevent the problem from cropping up again. With this done, the rats will eventually just go away on their own. These processes are referred to as detoxification and drainage in the world of holistic healthcare. So, that's not specifically what I'm looking for before we play this clip, though. So, let me keep going. Well, one more thing. Nascens has also found that the factors that cause somatids to enter these abnormal life stages are the very same factors that are the root cause of all human disease. Those factors are nutritional deficiencies, chemical and heavy metal toxicity, accidents, physical trauma, shock, chronic distress, psychological depression, or emotional factors. In other words, these factors cause susceptible tissue to become diseased, and the presence of diseased tissue triggers somatids to morph into some new life form, bacteria, virus, fungus, etc. So, question. Have we had trauma? Have we had shock, chronic distress? Have we had psychological depression, emotional factors in the last 18 months or so that may cause someone to become more susceptible to certain things? Let's see if I can find what I'm actually looking for. Okay, so through the years of experimentation, Rife discovered that every organism vibrates at a certain frequency and that each species has its own particular frequency range. Others, including Dr. Hulda Clark, have since confirmed this. Quantum physics would also concur. So instead of staining the bugs, Rife used plain polarized light to visualize his subjects. This meant he didn't have to kill them to see them and thus could actually watch the little buggers in action. When the correct frequency of light was shined upon the specimen, the germs would vibrate and glow, literally giving off their own particular colored light, which allowed him to see things that could not otherwise have been seen, even at these high magnifications. What he saw was amazing, and though Rife didn't know it, it confirmed exactly what Antoine Beauchamp had declared years earlier. Rife watched and studied as living germs morphed into completely different forms with a simple change of the environment. They would morph from the familiar round or cocci form of bacteria to the long rod-shaped bacillus form, to the corkscrew shape, a spirochete, with what amounted to the change in the food supply. He could also make them transform from a virus to bacteria to fungus to parasite, and then all the way back again. So skipping ahead, after years of experimentation with both lab animals and humans, Rife, like Beauchamp, said that germs arose from within the body and that they were not the cause of disease, but rather the result. The idea of pleomorphism was earth-shattering to the medical profession. Rife's discovery threatened to nullify the precious germ theory of disease, the very foundation of their existence, since Louis Pasteur got it wrong back in the 1870s. But rather than accept this startling new evidence and give Rife the Nobel Prize for Medicine, Rife was arrested, his lab broken into, and his microscope was destroyed. All of his records were stolen as well. And so one last little bit before we play this clip. It sort of bridges the gap from this to what John posited yesterday. Again, if I can find what I'm looking for. Where is that? These little guys that don't die, that's what I'm looking for, that particular section. kind of that. Beauchamp saw from his experiments that life was adaptive. He said that even death is a necessary part of life. White blood cells will destroy themselves when they become engorged with bacteria in a heroic effort to save the whole organism. Skin cells, as they venture even closer to the surface, are on a collision course with their own death. So too are we from the very moment we are conceived. These microzoa, somatids, or prions are a part of that process. Beauchamp wrote, "After death, it is essential that matter is restored to its primitive condition, for it has only been lent for a time to the living organized being. The living being, filled with microzoas, carries in itself the elements essential for life, disease, death, and destruction." That's kind of close. It's interesting. Well, a couple of other things. Nancy Appleton from The Curse of Louis Pasteur. Microzymas can become disease entities as a result of what we eat, think, say, do, and feel. They can also become toxic because of chemicals in the air, water, soil, food, and many other factors of our lifestyle. So, probably this little excerpt, I think. Like Rife, Reich, and Enderlein before him, Nasons too saw what Beauchamp called microzymas and what are now called prions. But being unfamiliar with these other scientists' work, he called these ultra-microscopic, subcellular, living and reproducing granules somatids. Nasons is probably the top scientist in the world on this subject and has dedicated much of his life to studying these tiny creatures. He has found that somatids are essentially indestructible or immortal, quote-unquote. They can survive temperatures. Now, think about this, this little, as Brad Case puts it, ultra-microscopic, subcellular, living and reproducing granule, these somatids. Think about this in the context of DARPA's swarming robotics. And what, you know, the clip that we're about to play, speaking of Norbert Wiener's creepy visions of the future, you know, God and Gollum Inc. So Nason's found has found that somatids are essentially indestructible or immortal. They can survive temperatures of more than 200 degrees Celsius, 392 degrees Fahrenheit. They survive exposure to 50,000 rems of nuclear radiation, far more than enough to kill any living thing. They cannot be killed by any known acid, and they can't be cut with a diamond knife. Ironically, one of the only ways he has found to kill them is to bombard them with electrons. So, this is, and so, Brad Case writes, this is exactly what electron microscopes do, so they cannot be seen in their living state using electron microscopy. According to Christopher Bird, who has interviewed Nasons extensively, quote, at the death of their hosts, such as ourselves, they, somatids, return to the earth where they live on for thousands or millions, perhaps billions of years. Antoine Beauchamp actually found microzymas in limestone dating back 60 million years. To a time when mammals first began to appear on Earth, another French researcher, this one a paleontologist, has found similar forms and sections of rock that are over 3 billion years old. This is a parenthetical insertion, and I would add my own parenthetical insertion about the speed of light not being constant, and maybe the dating systems are misleading, but I digress. Continuing, since they contain no DNA or RNA, Nasons believes that somatids are the precursors of DNA, and the previously unknown factor between the living and non-living. Put another way, he theorizes that somatids are able to transform energy into living matter. Thus, they are essential to life. That is, without them, there would be no life. He's found that their activity is not restricted to bone marrow stem cells, but that all cells require the presence of somatids in order to divide. Somatids are found in cells of all living things, including plants, and also among the remains of previously living. In hundreds of years, if they dig up your bones, they would find living somatids there. It is felt that these somatids help to form the cells when they are born, quote-unquote, and help them to decompose when they die. Nascens feels he has stumbled upon nothing less than, quote, a brand new understanding of the basis of life and, quote, an entirely new biology. His theory threatens to destroy what is known as the central dogma of molecular biology, which states that all living things require nucleic acids, DNA or RNA, to reproduce, and that the genes on these nucleic acids control life. Nascens found that somatids go through three stages of life in a healthy organism: somatid, spore, and double spore, after which they return to the somatid form. And then in unhealthy organisms, in the unhealthy organism, however, they have 13 additional stages, including bacteria, microbacterial, and yeast or fungal stages. Anyway, this interesting, fascinating, essential building block of life that is virtually indestructible, you put that together with the visions, the, you know, psychopathic visions of someone like Norbert Wiener, and what do you get? So give this a listen real quick. We'll play a couple minutes of Alan Turing, Cybernetics and the Secret of Life by Aaron and Melissa Dykes, True Stream Media. Go ahead, please.
Like Wiener stated,
the existing natural reflexes are essentially part of the same mechanism that can inform all purposeful activity in automata. One need merely supply a circuit with receptors and effectors. Then they become goal-seeking devices.
And that, as one of Wiener's feedback-driven automata, machines would not only be able to learn from experience, but that such machines had the capability to transmit a message with precise instructions on how to replicate itself, thus transmitting and copying the image of artificial life, and therefore giving it the ability to construct offspring machines. In God and Gollum, Inc., Wiener thus outlines the powerful dangers of the technology he helped create, as man and machine were in the early 60s poised to gain godlike powers over life and death. Indeed, cyberneticians could now create the Gollum of legend out of metal and silicon.
Man makes man in his own image. This seems to be the echo or the prototype of the act of creation by which God is supposed to have made man in his image. Can something similar occur in the less complicated and therefore more understandable case of non-living systems that we call machines? What is the image of a machine? Can this image, as embodied in one machine, bring a machine of a general sort not yet committed to a particular specific identity to reproduce the original machine, either absolutely or under some change that may be construed as a variation? Can the new and varied machine itself act as an archetype, even as to its own departures from its own archetypal pattern? It is to the purpose of the present section to answer these questions, and to answer them by yes. Different as mechanical and biological reproduction may be, they are parallel processes, achieving similar results. In order to discuss intelligently the problem of a machine constructing another after its own image, we must make the notion of image more precise. Here, we must be aware that there are images and images. Pygmalion made the statue of Galatea in the image of his ideal beloved, but after the gods brought it to life, it became an image of his beloved in a much more real sense. It was no longer merely a pictorial image, but an operative image. The operative images which perform the functions of their original may or may not bear a pictorial likeness to it. Whether they do or not, they may replace the original in its action, and this is a much deeper similarity. It is from the standpoint of operative similarity that we shall study the possible reproduction of machines. But what is a machine? For us, a machine is a device for converting incoming messages into outgoing messages. The machine as an instrument and as message thus suggests the sort of duality which is so dear to the physicist and is exemplified by duality between wave and particle. Thus, the machine may generate the message, and the message may generate another machine. It is like the witticism that a hen is merely an egg's way of making another egg. This is an idea with which I have toyed before, that it is conceptually possible for a human being to be sent over a telegraph line. The idea is impracticable, but it is not on that account inconceivable. However, it is a thoroughly realizable concept in the case of man-made machines from the message carrying the operational image of the machine. In describing the particular embodiment that I shall choose for the operational pattern of the machine to be reproduced, I also describe the formal character of the pattern, and it must be in mathematical terms. This is in fact very similar to what occurs in the fundamental act of reproduction of living matter. Here too, a substrate capable of assuming a large number of forms, molecular structures in this case, is caused to assume a particular form by the presence of a structure, a molecule, that already possesses this form. The multiplication of living matter occurs by a well-described template process in which the nucleic acids determine the laying down of amino acids. And this chain is doubled, consisting of a pair of complementary spirals. When these separate, each gathers to itself the molecular residues needed to reconstruct the double spiral of the original chain, and thus a reliable copy is made.
In Life's Code Script by Sidney Brenner, the Nature Journal highlighted the significance and the irony in that Turing's specific and technical definition of a universal Turing machine, which could theoretically accomplish any task if the program gives directions that are sufficiently clear as to what is to be accomplished, it best fits not merely a computer or a machine or a more advanced algorithm so much as it almost mirrors the reproduction of biological life according to minutely encoded and incredibly complex directions. Quote, Turing introduced what became known as the Turing machine to formalize the computation. Essentially, the system is a set of instructions written on the tape which describes the machine. Turing also defined a universal Turing machine which could carry out any computation for which an instruction can be written. This is the origin of the digital computer. Nowhere else are there such complicated systems in which every organism contains an internal description of itself. The concept of the gene as a symbolic representation of the organism, a code script, is a fundamental feature of the living world and must form the kernel of biological theory. And yet, at the same time, it matches up almost perfectly with Turing's definition of the universal Turing machine and the instructions for giving instructions to a computer. And Nature observes, quote, Turing invented the stored program computer, and von Neumann showed that the description is separate from the universal constructor. This is not trivial. Physicist Erwin Schrödinger confused the program and the constructor in his 1944 book, What is Life?, in which he saw chromosomes as, quote, architect's plan and builder's craft in one. But this is wrong. The code script contains only a description of the executive function, not the function itself. How that function is enacted and how it brings a code script to bring about life is still something of a mystery and taps into the meaning of God and everything else. In fact, it may be the deepest mystery of them all, perhaps the most closely guarded secret of all antiquity.
If you're not familiar, again, that's Aaron Dykes narrating the video Alan Turing, Cybernetics and the Secret of Life. And there was that excerpt there, particularly from Norbert Wiener's 1964 book, God and Gollum, Inc., a comment on certain points where cybernetics impinges on religion. It's pretty creepy stuff, I would say. But when you watch that video, when you start diving down this rabbit hole, when you start realizing, you know, that what I read from Brad Case's Thugs, Drugs, and the War on Bugs, you start realizing that much of so-called medical science is actually the actual pseudoscience and quackery. There's so much more that has been discovered. John in Tennessee just told us, you know, watching a video of basically Royal Raymond Rife's technology now being patented, We've seen the same thing. You know, people say, oh, this is fascinating stuff with these fancy electric vehicles. That's nothing new. You know, 100 years ago, they were more popular than they are today. So what happened? There was a control regime that did not want that technology to be used far and wide. We've been dumbed down. I would say we are less intelligent now than we were 100 years ago. There were folks, you know, we've lost the ability to tinker, basically. We're not curious anymore. We don't pass things on from generation to generation. But don't worry, because Google and Eric Schmidt will do that for us through Lamarckian epigenetics. And so we don't need parents to do that anymore. We can just, you know, we'll have Google do that for us. The selfish ledger will re-educate us. So now, since we buy the propaganda, we buy into it, we believe in and sort of worship at the altar of shiny packaging, we don't appreciate the value of tinker. I mean, who makes their own stuff these days? Well, it doesn't come in a shiny package, so, you know, doesn't have the same value. How ironic. You know, who's actually making things? I've talked about my father, you know, who had several different welding machines sitting around here and there, and, you know, if it needed to be made or whatever, it was some obscure thing, whether it was around the home or automotive or whatever, he'd just make it. Maybe it was a little trip to the hardware store and a couple of pieces of PVC and some, you know, a little of this, a little of that. But do we do that kind of thing anymore? Do we value those things? I doubt it. And now it's ironic because this technology is starting to kind of reemerge all around us, even though it's been being developed sort of on the quiet, as Aaron and Melissa Dykes point out in the video Alan Turing, Cybernetics and the Secret of Life. There's been this parallel development in so many things. Now we have Tesla. Now we're starting to see some of this technology, the Rife technology, emerge in peculiar DARPA sort of related ways. And very interesting, very, very peculiar. And while this is happening, we're being dumbed down. I think the Dunning-Kruger effect is definitely a companion to the discussion. I've mentioned anosognosia. From the Wikipedia entry on Dunning-Kruger, in Self-Insight, Roadblocks and Detours on the Path of Knowing Thyself, Dunning describes the Dunning-Kruger effect as, quote, the anosognosia of everyday life, referring to a neurological condition in which a disabled person either denies or seems unaware of their disability. He stated, quote, if you're incompetent, you can't know you're incompetent. The skills you need to produce a right answer are exactly the skills you need to recognize what a right answer is. And on that note, we'll be right back. Stick around.
The truth. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Extendivite 7 herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs at Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off Drop-In Lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off Drop-In Lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff LLC, 417-932-6419.
Hey, gang. Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, KosherTified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food conscious people. So why not check out the kosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the KosherTified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Welcome back. Bottom of the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast this Thursday, October 28, 2021. So, Dunning-Kruger. In 2011, David Dunning wrote about his observations that people with substantial measurable deficits in their knowledge or expertise lack the ability to recognize those deficits and, therefore, despite potentially making error after error, tend to think they are performing competently when they are not. Quote, in short, those who are incompetent, for lack of a better term, should have little insight into their incompetence, an assertion that has come to be known as the Dunning-Kruger effect. And again, the way that David Dunning described it, the anosognosia of everyday life. what a painful irony to be incapable of seeing one's own deficiencies. That's the painful irony. And so just a little bit maybe of humor on that, the Sprouts video, the Dunning-Kruger effect, a little bit on that, about half of that. So go ahead, please.
On April 19th, 1995, MacArthur Wheeler robbed a bank with his face glazed with lemon juice, believing the juice would make his face invisible to the surveillance cameras. He thought so because lemon juice works as invisible ink on a piece of paper. Police broadcasted the security camera footage on the local 11 o'clock news, and just after midnight, Arthur was arrested. Incredulously, he said, "But I wore the juice!" Baffled by this reasoning, David Dunning and Justin Kruger, two psychologists, studied Mr. Wheeler and others like him. They came to the conclusion that people with low ability at a task tend to, paradoxically, overestimate themselves. This cognitive bias is known as the Dunning-Kruger effect. Let's look at this graphically, plotting one's confidence in your ability against one's actual knowledge in a field. As we learn something new, we are often highly confident because we know so little that as soon as we know a tiny bit, we think we know it all. Those who stop learning here maintain a false sense of mastery. Those who continue learning realize things are more complex and often lose motivation. And the more they increase their knowledge, the lower their confidence becomes. Many stop at this stage, thinking they've learned nothing. Only if we keep going can we regain confidence while getting better. And at the end, we will be full of knowledge and almost as confident in our ability as right after we started. In other words, if a simpleton, a good student, and a wise teacher were to have a public debate, this is how things could go down. The simpleton knows just a little bit, but is very confident and voices his opinions loud and without hesitations. The student knows more, but doesn't realize it because she lacks confidence. She keeps quiet. The teacher is confident, but understands how complex things really are. Hence, voices his opinions with reservations. In the end, the simpleton wins the popular vote, because he is so confident about being right, and people tend to trust certainty. Research.
So how ironic, you know, factor into this Bertrand Russell's observation in The Impact of Science on Society. We now know that limelight and brass band do more to persuade than can be done by the most elegant train of syllogisms. It may be hoped that in time, anybody will be able to persuade anybody of anything if he can catch the patient young and is provided by the state with money and equipment. So limelight and brass band, if we can stir up emotions, if we can whip people into an emotional frenzy. Hayek, same thing, The Road to Serfdom, Chapter 10, Why the Worst Get on Top. The demagogue will find himself on top because he will be able to obtain the support of all the docile and gullible who have no strong convictions of their own but are prepared to accept a ready-made system of values if it is only drummed into their ears sufficiently loudly and frequently. Dunning-Kruger combines with the limelight and brass band of propaganda. It will be those whose vague and imperfectly formed ideas are easily swayed and whose passions and emotions are readily aroused who will thus swell the ranks of the totalitarian party. Just a couple more observations real quick and then I'll move on. So take all of this and then also factor in what Jaron Lanier has reminded us of about how we behave around technology. Remember, I mentioned this several times, you are not a gadget, a manifesto. Jaron Lanier, father of virtual reality technology. So, speaking of the Turing test and Alan Turing, whenever I hear about Alan Turing, I think of what Jaron Lanier wrote, reminding us that in Turing's 1950 paper on the test, he, as Jaron Lanier mentions, his paper includes this extraordinary passage: in attempting to construct such machines, we should not be irreverently usurping his capital H power of creating souls any more than we are in the procreation of children. Rather, we are in either case instruments of his will, again capital H, providing mansions for the souls that he creates. I dare say, when you consider that, late in Alan Turing's career, that much of what is posited and presented about Alan Turing is a misrepresentation of him. So Jaron Lanier writes, "The Turing test cuts both ways. You can't tell if a machine has gotten smarter or if you've just lowered your own standards of intelligence to such a degree that the machine seems smart. If you can have a conversation with a simulated person presented by an AI program, can you tell how far you've let your own sense of personhood degrade in order to make the illusion work for you? People degrade themselves in order to make machines seem smart all the time. We have repeatedly demonstrated our species' bottomless ability to lower our standards to make information technology look good. Every instance of intelligence in a machine is ambiguous. The same ambiguity that motivated dubious academic AI projects in the past has been repackaged as mass culture today. Did that search engine really know what you want? Or are you playing along, lowering your standards to make it seem clever? And now it's gone further than that, right? Now it's this reprogram again. Even Google admits that they can sway, they can influence people 95% of the time, regardless of political spectrum, with search results. Get you believing whatever they want, essentially. So continuing, while it's to be expected that human perspective will be changed by encounters with profound new technologies, the exercise of treating machine intelligence as real requires people to reduce their mooring to reality. A significant number of AI enthusiasts, after a protracted period of failed experiments in tasks like understanding natural language, eventually found consolation in the adoration for the hive mind, which yields better results because there are real people behind the curtain. And again, this gets into the same subject matter that is discussed, or at least outlined, in the TrueStream Media video, Alan Turing, Cybernetics, and the Secret of Life. And the concept of big data. Basically, the more data we have, the more it becomes possible to answer virtually any question in simple terms. I'll just boil it down to that. So they found consolation in the adoration for the hive mind, which yields better results because there are real people behind the curtain. And more data to analyze means the possibility of answering any question. Wikipedia, for instance, works on what I call the Oracle illusion, in which knowledge of the human authorship of a text is suppressed in order to give the text superhuman validity. What was the video that Aaron Melissa Dykes did on that, by the way? The guy, the crazy opera singing, was it the technocratic global government of the future? Is here, I think. I don't remember which one it was. What is that guy's name, too? The guy credited with the authorship of so many of the Wikipedia articles. I don't remember. No, it wasn't the technocratic global government. They did a video about that, though. I forget which one it was. 35,000 entries, several million edits. What's his name? I forget. Anyway, we've talked about that guy before. So, continuing with Jaron Lanier, the Oracle Illusion, Wikipedia, in which knowledge of the human authorship of text is suppressed in order to give it superhuman validity. Traditional holy books work in precisely the same way and present many of the same problems. This is another reason, Jaron Lanier says, I sometimes think of cybernetic totalist culture as a new religion. The designation is much more than an approximate metaphor, since it includes a new kind of quest for an afterlife. It's so weird to me that Ray Kurzweil wants the global computing cloud to scoop up the contents of our brains so we can live forever in virtual reality. when my friends and I built the first virtual reality machines, the whole point was to make this world more creative, expressive, empathic, and interesting. It was not to escape it. A parade of supposedly distinct big ideas, quote-unquote, that amount to the worship of the illusions of bits has enthralled Silicon Valley, Wall Street, and other centers of power. It might be Wikipedia or simulated people on the other end of the phone line, but really what we are just hearing, Turing's mistake repeated over and over. But I don't think it was Turing's mistake per se. It was, as I said, kind of a misappropriation. But, you know, I would say Jaron Lanier is much smarter and more knowledgeable on the subject than I, so I'm going to acknowledge my ignorance and inferior knowledge of not just probably Turing, but certainly the subject matter. I would say that Jaron Lanier is much more of a subject matter expert. But it's just curious, you know, how we are being conditioned to be victims of, as David Dunning puts it, the anosognosia of everyday life. We're being conditioned to behave that way. And this digital technology, again, I mean, if you haven't seen the video, Alan Turing, Cybernetics and the Secret of Life by TrueStream Media, the digital aspect of the discussion is fascinating and what the implications are. I mean, I've mentioned recently that in my own life, I feel compelled to move more toward analog, you know, more analog, less digital is kind of the unspoken, unwritten motto or mantra that I seem to be sort of gravitating toward, which is interesting. And it's fascinating how more analog seems to open you up to creativity and inspiration and those kinds of things. And digital seems to herd you into the virtual panopticon of technocratic, cybernetic, totalist enslavement. And, you know, in simple terms, you become a kind of a subject in Skinner's operant conditioning chamber. So, interesting stuff. I don't know. Maybe my Bader Meinhof is playing tricks on me again. Or maybe not. So to the conversation before we close quickly, see if I can do this quickly. I was eavesdropping on this gentleman's conversation yesterday. It was a very public conversation, so it wasn't really eavesdropping, as I said earlier. But in the course of the conversation, he said, you know, and I was just kind of listening around me. And then he said, this gentleman said, if I knew 40 years ago what I know now. And he paused, and I was riveted. You can imagine, you know, very curious. I mean, he seemed like, you don't know. I didn't know at that point, where is this going? Who is this guy? What does he know? So he paused. I was riveted. And then he finished. I would have been a lawyer. And I thought, eh. And then he said, of common law. I would have been a common law lawyer. And then he started to elaborate a little bit. Following that, we had quite a conversation. How many blue-collar folks do you suppose would make that kind of specific observation? Especially in today's America. How many of us are constitutional scholars, shall we say, masters of our own domain? Throughout our brief American history, we've been repeatedly warned and exhorted to eternal vigilance. Many of those warnings and exhortations have come at great peril and tremendous personal costs, including the loss of honor and reputation, personal fortunes, and even death. Yet, here we sit, comfortably appointed. What do you suppose, if anything, could or will shake us from our stupor? I wonder. You know, the tchotchkes, the whiskey and beads, you know, during the course of that conversation, and then suddenly other people were drawn into the conversation, but I explained, as I put it, you know, we're getting the, let's call it the Native American treatment, among other treatments these days, you know, being herded into the reservation, whether we like it or not. Stick around, we'll be right back.
Extendivite 7 herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs in Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store, or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
It's the good life, full of fun, seems to be the ideal. Yes, the good life lets you hide all the sadness you feel. You won't really fall in love, 'cause you can't take the chance. So be honest with yourself, don't try to fake romance. It's the good life to be free and explore the unknown, like the heartaches when you learn you must face them alone. Please remember, I still want you. And in case you wonder why, well, just wake up, kiss that good life goodbye.
Welcome back. I think we should be asking a lot more questions these days and curious and not dehumanized. That's another aspect of the digital enslavement, is the dehumanization. And that's an important factor that I'm not going to get into right now. But again, if you watch the video, Alan Turing, Cybernetics and the Secret of Life, you might understand kind of what I mean. So again, in deference to what John in Tennessee said yesterday, his remarks yesterday specifically about 3D printing soulless humans. We played the clip, but you know, many might find such a thought outrageous to the point of absurdity. I would invoke Clark's third law. To those, I would suggest reading Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28 and taking them very seriously, to the point of literally. And then crossing that with today's field of biotechnology and emerging related fields, what you'll find is that such a concept has not only been posited for nearly 100 years, if not longer, there have been tireless efforts, countless books, and untold fortunes spent to bring about such a reality. You know, some of the books that, you know, have been written, medieval robots, man-made monsters, the Enlightenment, cyborg, mesmerists, monsters and machines, sublime dreams of living machines, Genesis redo, you know, many, many books have been written on this subject. You know, again, Kurzweil's Age of Spiritual Machines, Norbert Wiener's God and Golem, Inc., a comment on certain points where cybernetics impinges on religion. And so that we not become victims of the cybernetic totalist bent. Final words. Bruce Lee. Art is the expression of the self. The more complicated and restrictive a method is, the less opportunity there will be for the expression of one's original sense of freedom. The techniques, though they play an important role in the early stage, should not be too restrictive, complex, or mechanical. If we cling to them, we will become bound by their limitations. Remember, you are expressing the technique and not doing the technique. When someone attacks you, it is not technique number one or technique number two, stance two, section four, that you are doing. But the moment you are aware of his attack, you simply move in like sound and echo without deliberation. It is as though when I call, you answer me. Or when I throw something, you catch it. That's all. And so that in juxtaposition to so-called rote learning. I hope it was informative. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. F*** you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be a bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central, and Wednesday at 1 Central.
You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because